We are joined by our two guests this morning on the book review program. We have on the line Maulana Ashraf Dokrat. Maulana, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And as always, jazakumullah khairan for joining us.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And we also have with us Professor Nazim Ghulam, the author of the book The Story of the Transmission of Knowledge from the Islamic World to Europe. Professor Nazim, assalamu alaikum and jazakumullah khairan for joining us.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah and thank you for the opportunity.
It's a pleasure having you on the book review program this morning. Speaking about the book, and we'll get right into it, The Story of the Transmission of Knowledge from the Islamic World to Europe. Firstly, Professor Nazim, tell us, why did you write this book?
Well, initially, this was the topic for my PhD, which I completed at the International Islamic University in Malaysia 10 years ago. And then I thought I'd compile it into a small book. Initially, the thesis was 500 pages. And the other two reasons were that it is often thought that the sum total of philosophical scholarship is based on Western thought. And I thought the need was there to explain that the sum total of Western and universal philosophical thought had a great dependence on Islamic thought, and one had to again reassert the contribution of Islamic philosophical thought to the sum total of universal philosophical thought.
Professor Nazim, picking up what you have just said, what then would you say are the central themes of your book?
The central ideas in the book are the great human ideas of intellect, akal, knowledge, ilm, wisdom, truth, haq, and faith, iman. And I look at particularly at the contribution of Ibn Rushd and Ibn Sina and their contributions to influencing two Western scholars, namely René Descartes of France, the Catholic thinker, and the great St. Thomas of Aquinas, another Catholic thinker from Napoli in Italy.
So would you say there was considerable influence then, and you can trace that influence directly, the contribution of Muslim thinkers to these founders or very important figures in Western thought?
Well, before I say that again about the central themes, besides these fundamental ideas, the story of how Greek philosophy was discovered by the Muslims about 1,000 years back and then transmitted by them to the West provides one of the most fascinating chapters in the book of Mankind's Progress from Ignorance to Enlightenment. And my contribution is but a small part of this fascinating chapter of how the work was translated from the Greek to Arabic and from Arabic to Latin.
Very interesting, Professor Nazim. And now looking at the book and more information on the book, which philosophers do you focus on in the book?
I focus on the influence. First of all, maybe I should say a word on the title. It's quite long, and sometimes a layperson might get confused.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the transmission of knowledge from the Islamic world to Europe. Obviously, all areas of knowledge from the Islamic world were transferred in the sciences, in medicine, in optometry, in all fields. My book concentrates on philosophical knowledge. When I say from the Islamic world to Europe, of course, 1,000 years ago, Al-Andalus, southern Spain, was a great part of our Islamic world. And there are still great, great monuments to be seen, as I show in my book, in Granada, called Granada then, and Cordoba, called Cordoba, when the Muslims were there. So the two philosophers I look at were both philosophers who lived in Spain, southern Spain. They are Ibn Rushd and Ibn Sina. And I look at how Ibn Rushd influenced St. Thomas of Aquinas and Ibn Sina influenced René Descartes. Would you like me, Maulana Ibrahim, to just elaborate a bit on this?
Yeah, yes, you may elaborate.
So Ibn Rushd's main contribution to Islamic philosophical thought was his harmonization of reason and revelation. mm-hmm. of Akal and divine revelation. And his great work was his Kitab Fasl al-Makal, which is the harmonization of reason and revelation. Now, I don't want to go into detail. All the details are discussed in the book. But 100 years later, St. Thomas of Aquinas wrote, and his thesis was also on the harmonization of revelation and reason. And many scholars, even Western scholars, have said that when one reads St. Thomas of Aquinas' work, one can see that he relied heavily on the work of Ibn Rushd. One other point here, many of the scholars of 1,000 years ago, be they Jewish or Christian, had a great knowledge of Arabic, so they were able to read the Arabic texts and then refer to them and even translate them from Arabic into Latin, and thus the great transmission of knowledge took place from Islam to Europe through translation work.
Now, in preparing this book, you have yourself, you know, added some very colorful photographs to the text, and this has certainly enhanced the reading experience for me.
Yes.
What was your motivation behind this addition to the book, sir?
Yes, for the listeners who don't like reading, I've included some photographs. No, even if you don't like reading, these color photographs will encourage you, will inspire you to read. So, alhamdulillah, I've been to many of these places. First of all, Qurtuba, the great mosque of Qurtuba.
Yes.
The mihrab of Qurtuba, which is one of the great mihrabs of the world. And it shows us how the honor and status of an imam used to be in those days, when these mihrabs used to display and were created with great skill and detail. So first of all, Cordoba, then of course the great Alhambra in Granada, called the Granada then. There are pictures of the Alhambra. I've also been to Seville, and the great mosque of Seville still stands, but with a bell in its minaret, as all the old masajid of Al-Andalus have now been simply turned into churches by inserting a bell into the minaret. Then I've been to the great Karawiyin Masjid in Fez in Morocco, and there is a wonderful picture of the courtyard of that masjid. And by the way, we can talk a bit later about who started and who built the Karawiyin. It's a very interesting story. It was a great woman that was involved in the construction of the Karawiyin, which is our first, the world's first university. And there are also pictures of Gibraltar, Jabal al-Tar. The story of Jabal al-Tar comes in as well when we look at Spain, and a number of other photographs, but beautiful color photographs, which will enhance the reader or the reader, the non-reader.
Fair.
Professor Nazima, together with the different masajids and the different places that you visited, I'm sure that, you know, libraries also that you have referred to in the book, can you tell us more about that, the library that you visited?
Yes, you know, that is the one chapter that might be very interesting to read. It's a short chapter, it's chapter 3 of the book, and it talks about the great Islamic libraries of the Middle Ages. And it's a lovely question for the Islamic schools. I was just thinking the other day, if this book was distributed to Islamic schools, it would be a nice 10-mark question, discuss the libraries of the great Islamic world. But in any event, we start again with Qurtuba, the Royal Library of Qurtuba. Then there is the Royal Library of Cairo. All these royal libraries, of course, in Arabic called Darul Hikmah, the houses of wisdom. Then we look at the Sultan Ibn Mansur Mosque in Bukhara, in what is now Uzbekistan. And, of course, I also look at a number of other libraries, Baghdad. Before I go further, Baghdad and Cairo were two of the great cities of the Middle Ages. In fact, just to go off the point for a moment, So the question of knowledge, we often Western people think that knowledge came from Greece and went straight to the great universities of Paris, Oxford and Cambridge. But one must remember that the Greek texts were translated to Arabic, then they were translated to Latin and then went to Europe. So one cannot talk about the transmission of knowledge to Europe without mentioning that Baghdad and Cordoba were the great conduit pipes or tributaries through which they flowed into Europe. Yeah. And so Baghdad is also important. That's where the great Imam al-Ghazali studied and taught. I've mentioned him in the book. The great universities and libraries of Mustan Siriya and Nizamiya and the Darul Hikmah in Baghdad. So those are some of the libraries I refer to in the third chapter, which is quite a short chapter.
And also,
please carry on, Mahanabra.
I see that you know, the book contains many great quotations as well. Can you highlight some of them for us?
Well, I end the book with, yes, may I say that the book contains many ayat of the glorious Quran and one of the leading ayat. And I say that if the only purpose of my writing this book was to include the great verse of light, the ayah of Nur, Allahu Nuru Samawati wal Ard, to the end, then this book has been worth writing it. So the book contains a number of ayat of the Quran placed in context in depending on what I'm discussing in the book. And this particular chapter, I briefly examine the various concepts such as Mishkat, Misbah, etc., etc. But I cannot go into that now. Then with the end of the book, I look at two quotes of two great Sufi mystics, the great Maulana Jalaluddin Rumi and Hafiz of Shiraz. Jalaluddin Rumi said that in the end everything except Allah does perish. And if I may just quote four lines of his great poetry, Rumi says, I died as mineral and became a plant. I died as plant and rose to animal. I died as animal and I was man. Why should I fear? When was I less by dying? Yet once more I shall die as man to soar with the angels blessed. But even from angelhood I must pass on. And the last line, all except Allah doth perish. And Maulana Ashraf, you might note that this is the last ayah of Surah Qasas. Kullu shay'in halikun illa wajha. Kullu shay'in halikun, all except, or everything will perish, illa wajha, except his countenance, except Allah. So a great piece of poetry there by Jalaluddin Rumi. I end also with a quote by the great Christian thinker, St. Augustine. And it is in this context that you know, we live in an age of doubt. A thousand years ago, the people lived in an age of faith, yet they ask questions. It's so more difficult nowadays when young people especially want answers to everything. So in that context, St. Augustine said something very, very wise. He said, seek not to understand that you may believe, but believe that you may understand. Seek not to understand that you may believe, but believe that you may understand. And finally, there are many other quotes, but one not particularly from any scholar, but something very, very wise. And it's something in the context of which we can think about our daily lives. And the quote is this: small minds discuss people. Average minds discuss events. Great minds discuss ideas.
Mm-hmm. I think that, and what I enjoy about the book is that you've used bold print in identifying some important aspects of each page, which actually stands out very, very well.
Yes.
I think that was a very clever thing to do in publishing the book. But let us take up a discussion that you had earlier on, and you referred to Fatima al-Fehri, I think.
Oh, yes.
You know, on page 80, I think you referred to her also. Tell the listeners a bit more about her, please, Sultan Nazim.
Fatima al-Fehri, and she had a sister called Maryam, holds the singular honor and distinction of being not only the first woman, but the first person to start and construct a university. It was she. She was from Kairouan in Tunisia. It's after that place, Kairouan, the Karawi Masjid in Morocco is named. And the reason is she inherited a great sum of money from her father. All the male siblings have passed on. And Fatima and her sister Mariam inherited a great sum of money. And what they did was, while Mariam saw to the development of the great mosque of Al-Andalus, or rather the great mosque of Cordoba, Fatima al-Fahri saw to it to build the Karawiyin complex with a masjid and the university, and she is therefore the first woman, the first person to build a university. That in fact is the oldest university in the world. I stand to correction, but yes, the Karawiyin Masjid is the first university of the world.
Yes, sir.
And there have been great scholars there. But that is in short, Fatima al-Fahri, a great topic for the whole debate on women and education, and for those people interested in doing further research, this is a great piece of research people who go into the Fatima al-Fahri story.
Very interesting there, Professor Nazim. And, looking at Spain, there's such a rich Islamic history in Spain. And, the one thing that comes to mind is, why did Toledo in Spain become the main center for the translation of works from Arabic to Latin?
Toledo is a town just north of Madrid. And by the way, I'm sure modern Ashraf will know this, the original name for Madrid was Majrit. Majrit was the Arabic name, and then became Madrid when the Christians took over. So Toledo is sort of north of Madrid, and the reason that this city became the center was most of the popes were based there 1,000 years ago, and they were very interested in scholarship of the highest quality, and they saw and realized that the Muslim scholars were scholars of the highest quality, and this interested them in their work. Also, Arabic was the main language of the main language used in Toledo. And thirdly, the Jews, Christians, and Muslims gathered together, and they had great discussions, and the discussions were in Arabic. So Toledo, I always say the first four letters of Toledo tells us a lot about the place. It was a place of tolerance. A place of tolerance between Muslims, Jews, and Christians. And perhaps we can learn a lot in our times from the tolerance displayed 1,000 years ago by differing groups of the Abrahamic tradition. So this is why Toledo was so important. But many other cities were important. There are many cities in Spain which I have not even visited or studied, but you will find the Islamic relics or masjid in the town, and they were all important places. The Muslims were quite prevalent all over Spain, but particularly Al-Andalus.
Dr. Nazim, in closing then, who do you think will enjoy reading your book?
I think any reader, what I say at the back of my book is that this book is written with a wide readership in mind, not only those interested in philosophy, theology, law, history, and travel, but to the inquiring mind in general. Mm-hmm. And I may say at the end, before we leave, where this book is available.
Mm. Yes, please do.
Would you like me to tell the listeners?
Please. Where yes, please yes, do. Yes,
I see. Yes, I think our listeners.
As we are doing the discussion, many listeners have sent messages in, to inform us where the book can be purchased and where they can get hold of the book.
Okay, Maulana Ashraf, the book is available at Exclusive Books at 280 Rand a book. In Durban, the book is available at Baitul Hikmah as well as the Al Ansar bookshop. And also in Lodium at the Ikra bookstore. But I would also like to mention, inshallah, this Friday, the 12th of April, I will, inshallah, be delivering the Jummah lecture on the book. and we will be selling books of the Juma. That's at the Masjid Abu Bakr Siddiq, also known as the Al Ghazali Complex in Rasmia in Pretoria. Inshallah, on this Inshallah. Coming Friday.
Inshallah. Jazakumullah khair. And Marana, any other questions from your side?
Yes, no, I'd like to congratulate, I think, Professor Nazim on his publication. I know he's been hard at work on it for a long time now. And congratulations on this publication. And for me, it's important that, you know, as Muslims, we understand our Islamic heritage, and we realize the great contribution that Muslims and Islam has made to learning and to knowledge in general, really. And I think this book goes a long way to really giving us that sort of appreciation for our Torah, for our heritage.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Maulana Ashraf, and also Maulana Ibrahim Daya. Sure. And may I end with a great quote. The book is about reason and revelation, the use of our aql. Yes. And it was Hazrat Ali radiallahu anhu said that reason and logic are the foundations of my deen. And I think that is a great quote to end on. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Professor Nazim talking to us about the book that he has published, and he said that it is available at Exclusive Books. The book again, the name of the book is The Transmission, or rather the story of the transmission of knowledge from the Islamic world to Europe. Ma'ashraf, jazakumullah khairan again for joining us, and inshallah we will speak to you next week.
Inshallah, Malana. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.